Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi everyone, and welcome to History Dweeb. I am Tim, and joining me as always is the blue hair beauty, Brandy. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm well, Tim. How are you?
I'm outstanding.
Spectacular.
And of course, we're joined by, as always, by the very distinguished Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
Well, Timmy, I'm just re-energized. You know, I am burning the candle at both ends with these podcasts, the presidential campaign.
Yeah, how is your campaign going?
It's going along just swimmingly, Tim.
I understand you just got back from Nassau, New Hampshire?
New Hampshire, yeah.
And you had spoke in front of 19,000 people.
19,000 people.
I didn't even know there were 19,000 people in New Hampshire.
I really did not know where New Hampshire was. I knew it was somewhere east of me.
Yeah, sure.
And it was going to be cold up there.
Right.
But very nice people. They ate a lot of pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
so you were well received.
I was well received because they don't like the people in New Hampshire don't like foolishness.
Yeah.
They don't tolerate foolishness, and that's what they see.
So I'm sure they'll look forward to your return.
13,000 people, tell me, you know how much I raised?
How much?
13,000 people, and I raised $6,500.
That is awesome. And you're reporting that, right?
Excuse me?
I said, you know, you have to report that.
Well, I just reported it.
To the federal, no, to me.
No, that's my report.
You have to send it to the Federal Election Commission.
And then let me tell you what happened up there, and I'll get off of this, but had somebody, this ties right in with this, had a man come up to me and say, hey, Mr. Colonel, we would like to get you on board with this Keystone Pipeline thing.
Yeah.
We'd like to talk to you about that.
Right.
I said, well, I'm willing to talk about anything. You know what the man does?
What?
Hands me a suitcase for cash.
So he was trying to bribe you.
He was trying to bribe the colonel.
Yeah, there's no bribing you. He underestimates you. Clearly.
I told him to take his suitcase before he got the colonel's 10D boot in his rear end.
Good for you, colonel.
I told him the colonel vote is not for sale.
Very good, colonel. We're proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so today the topic of today's podcast is the Battle of Blair Mountain, and as part of that, the Matawan Massacre, and this deals with the battle between the battle to unionize the coal miners in southern West Virginia at the turn of the century. Before we get started, do we have any shout-outs?
I got a couple shout-outs.
All right, Colonel.
I got a couple shout-outs. I got, I'd like to thank, I went into one of my favorite stores yesterday, Cincinnati Vapors, because they had a place that got me to stop smoking so the Colonel could
Start
vaping so the Colonel could rule the country for 50 years.
So you're going to exceed FDR, and your plan is to do away with the limits for presidential.
Yeah, those are silly.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be a senator forever, but a president for 8 years, that's just stupid.
Okay.
That's just stupid. That's one of the first things we're going to get rid of. But Cincinnati Vapors. Mm-hmm. I go down there. They always treat me right. If you're wanting to quit smoking, you ought to go down there because they will teach you. They will show you. They will get you off those devil cigarettes. And I go in there, and Kevin says, "Hey, it's the Colonel. We've been listening to your show. We love the show." So what I said is, you know what? And this is what you folks need to understand out there. We're on iTunes, too. When you get download us, if you like us, rate us. Because it makes us easier for other people to find and enjoy.
Yeah, we would really appreciate that if you could. If you're listening to us on iTunes, if you could rate us, that would be great. Because as the Colonel says, it makes it easier for other people to find us.
But yeah, Kevin Dunn. Now, Kevin is a strange guy. He's kind of a peculiar guy. Very, very smart guy. And he's got a, I thought it was his wife, but apparently they just live together. Girl named Kara, just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful girl. How Kevin ended up with this woman is just so beyond me. I never could get it. But I was headed somewhere with that, and the Colonel, you know, he gets sidetracked a little bit. But anyway, thanks for Kevin, for everybody down at Cincinnati Vapors, except for Xander, because he kind of... He's a little squirrely. I don't trust that boy too much. And then we got a sponsor this week.
Oh, wonderful. A new sponsor.
And this ties back into a story we did earlier.
Okay.
It is Gein Home Goods.
Oh, yeah. We talked about Ed Gein and his... Yeah.
It's Gein Home Goods. They're a green company. They recycle. You could get your... commemorative skull cereal bowls.
You make your favorite aunt your lampshade.
Yeah, you got. It's like
limitless.
People those always say orders. They never leave us. They're always with. You could actually have somebody always with you.
Yeah,
they could be your couch cushion.
It's going to cost you extra though. Those are special orders.
Well, they're special orders. I mean, it's all custom work.
So
it's
check out.
So no, if you can buy off the display floor.
Yeah, but you don't know what you're getting.
I mean, you don't know what you're getting.
You might be getting those people. Getting. No, they're scratching debt.
Yeah. You're not getting someone special. You just get, like the Colonel said, maybe a homeless person or what.
Now, I will say, and I don't like to say this to the sponsor, but don't get the stew at the lunch counter.
Not good.
It was a little, it did not taste like chicken to me.
Okay. Thank you, Colonel. Okay, so on to the Battle of Blair Mountain and the Meituan Massacre. So to set this story, I'm going to give you guys kind of put some of this in context. And, Colonel, I got a question for you. You load 16 tons. What do you get?
A hernia and another day older and deeper in debt.
Absolutely. And that was the conditions of the folks working in the coal mine industry at the turn of the 20th century in the United States. And that's the focus of our podcast. In the 1870s, a lot of land speculators bought up land in the Appalachian area. And this land was bought by coal companies so that they could get the mineral rights to the land. And they set up the industry there, a feudal system that exploited the local people living there, exploited their workers, by setting up what were called company towns. And the company town was just as it sounds. The company would set up the post office. They set up the doctor's office. They set up company stores. All the housing in the area was owned by the company. They had all the politicians usually in their back pocket. And
not to interrupt you here, Timmy, but one of the things that was amazing to me about this is when you say, you know, the speculators were buying up land.
You're right.
A lot of times there were settlers on the land that owned the land.
Right.
And because they had the politicians and everybody in the back pocket, they just come in. The big companies buy the land.
Yeah, and we're talking.
And they kick the people off.
Yeah, and we're talking about the big names, right? The Rockefellers, the DuPonts,
And you're right. The people who were living in that the area, the Appalachians, had very very few rights, and they had a choice of really working for the coal mine or leaving the area. And they were lived in the company housing. And if they did something that the company didn't like, they not only could they lose their job, but they lost their housing. They would lose their health care. They would lose, they'd be evicted and basically would be tossed out on the street. And they didn't really have anywhere to turn. The local officials, the law enforcement, they were all in the back pocket of the big coal industries. So unionization or anything like that, if they even talked about unionizing, they would come in and they would evict them, men, women, children, throw them out, throw their stuff out on the street. And the conditions that they worked in were just horrible conditions, very dangerous. There were a lot of explosions. There were a lot of very dangerous conditions. Of course, a lot of people developed over the years black lung, which is where the coal dust would settle down into the lungs. And, you know, I had neighbors who had that when I saw it as I was growing up, people who had, in my hometown, who had worked in coal mines, and it's really disgusting. They would be just spitting up blood all the time.
Well, it was kind of a cross between emphysema and cancer. That and it was horrible.
Yeah, exactly. And if you didn't work, if you couldn't work, you didn't get paid. In fact, you only got paid by what you produce, and so every day the company would weigh the amount of coal that you extracted from the mine, and they would pay you based upon the coal you obtained from the mine, and they would weigh it, and then they would discard if they found rocks or whatever in it. They would deduct that. So you were basically it was basically up to them what they wanted to pay you. And they only paid you in company scrip. They didn't pay you in money. They didn't pay you in U.S. currency. And the company scrip was only good, could only be used at the company store. So even if they give you a raise, they just turn around and raise the prices at the company store.
You know, one of the funny things you were talking about the weight. One time, and you know, they had groups of kids who worked in the mines.
Mm-hmm.
And these children decided what they did was they sat on the line, and the coal came and passed really between the legs, and their job was to pull out the slate.
Yeah.
And these supervisors would walk around, and if they saw some slate getting past one kid, they just hit him with a stick.
Hit him with a big piece of hickory.
Mm-hmm. And the kids just said, now these are 8-year-old kids. Say, hell with this. And they went out on strike. And they got actually what they wanted.
Yeah,
from this group.
So our gang took off, and
it was like Spanky and our gang. They were like, "Hell with this!" And the company they weren't asking for anything. What they were really asking for was like a quarter penny, of a penny on the hour, and not to be hit with a stick. And the other thing that you mentioned, they got weighed. You know, it came out at the end of the day. They got weighed. The company controlled the scales.
Absolutely.
And they could get you that way, too.
Yeah, they controlled the scales, and if they found what they call rocks, this is not coal, you wouldn't get paid for that. So it was really a feudal system, and with the coal miners being a little more than indentured servants, like I said, if they even discussed organizing, the company would, fire them, throw them out of their housing. They couldn't get any recourse from the local authorities. They'd lose everything. So it was really, almost like an indentured servitude type of situation. The company would have they had their own police force, and Matuan, we're going to talk about in a little bit. That police force was the Baldwin Felts Detective Agency, and we're using detective agency air quotes, because really they were just hired guns that were used by the coal mining companies to enforce their will on the coal miners, their own special police force. There was a Southern equivalent of what's the other detective?
The Pinkertons.
Pinkertons. Yeah. So all of this was occurring. This story takes place in 1920. So these conditions were going on for, you know, half a century. And a lot of things were going on in early 1920. The World War I had just ended. The Communist Revolution had started, you know, in Russia in 1917. So there was this Red Scare going on in the United States, where a fear of communism spreading to the U.S. And the big coal companies, as well as other industrialists, used that threat as to suppress the labor movement, saying, you know, like, you know, we can't, you know, these unions are, you know, fronts for communists. So, of course, there was the Red Scare that occurred, and a lot of people were thrown in jail who were advocating child labor laws and better working conditions for not only coal miners, but everyone working, because this is also the time of the Industrial Revolution, where people were working in, you know, dangerous conditions, not only in coal mines, but in factories and in other places. So,
well, and another thing that happened in that too, Timmy, is that World War I ended.
Yes.
And once World War I ended, the demand for coal dropped.
That's true. It had a pretty
significant drop. So the need for production dropped, and they had the workers. So they kind of had, if they had the workers by the balls before, now they really had them, because the demand was dropping off, and they didn't need so many workers, so they could just say, hey,
exactly,
if you don't want to be here, we'll get somebody else.
So the United Mine Workers of America made a lot of headway in unionizing the coal miners because of these terrible working conditions that people were living in. And then by 1920, they had organized many of the coal mines in West Virginia. But they couldn't get a foothold in southern West Virginia. They were having a hard time in southern West Virginia in Logan and Mingo County. And they were having difficulty getting in there. So they wanted to expand and get into southern West Virginia, on the West Virginia-Kentucky border. So they wanted to start in Mingo County because in Mingo County there were some local officials, the mayor and the sheriff there, who were miner friendly, you could say. They were more friendly to the miners than, say, the coal companies. Logan County was pretty much all the local officials were totally on board with the coal companies. So they wanted to try to organize in Mingo County. And so that's where they started tried to organize, and the company reacted by, again, strong-arming the coal miners, evicting them. So they set up little camps, coal mining camps, tents, after they got evicted from their home, and there was a confrontation in the town of Matuan. And Brandy's going to tell us a little bit about that.
So, well, first I want to talk about Sid Hatfield for just one second, because Sid actually was a pretty important character in Matuan and in Blair Mountain, all of this stuff. But Hatfield came from the same family, the Hatfield and the McCoys. He was a part of that feud. He was born in 1891. And to some of the more respectable town folk, worked his way up to being sheriff. He worked as a child. He'd worked on his farmer's farm. He was a miner in his teens. He was a blacksmith. So I mean, he kind of got the whole you know, hard work, and you know, he understood it. He lived it, and he was. you know, known for his hard living and his hard fighting, and he was eventually actually worked his way up to the police chief of Matuan, and was appointed that by Mayor Cornelius Testerman. And he was, Sid was a staunch supporter of the United Mine Workers of America. And so were the mayor. So together they were instrumental in leading the mining community's resistance to these Baldwin Felts operatives that came into town to help evict people. They were offered bribes, they were offered, you know, all these things, and every time they turned them down. Testerman eventually was, he was actually mortally wounded in the Battle of Matuan, and Sid married his widow. And there was rumors that he had actually killed the mayor, but he didn't. He was eventually assassinated by these people from the Baldwin Felts agency, detective agency, on the courthouse steps. He was assassinated. Him and his deputy were both gunned down.
Yeah, with their wives.
With their wives.
Their wives weren't killed, but their wives were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with this confrontation in Matuan, the Baldwin Felts brothers, I guess the Felts brothers.
There were three brothers. There were three brothers.
They actually came to Matuan to kind of squelch this unionization and start evicting people, like you said. And they had actually confronted, the sheriff had confronted Sheriff Hatfield with a warrant for their arrest.
On May 19th, 1920, they showed up at Matuan and were going to evict a bunch of people for, you know, wanting to unionize. And the sheriff had a warrant drawn up for their arrest. And so when they had this, they sort of confronted each other, and the sheriff presented his warrant to have them arrested, and then these people from the detective agency presented their warrant to have the sheriff arrested.
I thought that was funny. I was like, yeah. No, I've got a warrant for your arrest.
Yeah. And one of them says, this is a bogus warrant. And
to the mayor.
Warrant was fraudulent. The warrant against the sheriff was fraudulent.
And to me, the funniest thing about this whole thing, and the Blue Head Devil will get into it, but the funniest thing, the thing I had to laugh is, these Phelps guys coming in with Thompson submachine guns.
In their suitcases.
Thompson submachine guns. So they think they got, you know, they ain't nobody gonna mess with them. So they confront this guy, and they don't realize they're surrounded by armed miners.
Yeah, all over the place.
All over the place. They got miners with guns.
It was like an Old West kind of shootout where they're meeting the mayor and Sid Hatfield in the street. Right? Yeah. And they're walking down the middle of Main Street. The Felt brothers are walking down the middle of Main Street. And like you said, the mayor, Felt brothers tried to bribe the mayor. He wanted to put machine gunners on the roofs around mm-hmm. town. And
offering $500.
Offering $500. Mayor says, no thanks. So they present this warrant for Sid Hatfield's arrest, or Sid Hatfield presents a warrant for their arrest, and they show one for his. There is fraudulent, like Brandy said, and then we're really not sure who started the shooting, right?
They don't know who started the shooting, and you guys are right, they had civilians, workers all over, because, you know, West Virginia is kind of a hilly place, and they had the high ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not really sure who fired the shots, who fired the first shot, but it was, they met on the porch of Chambers Hardware Store, and it was Albert Felts that shot the mayor first, and then, like I said, the Felts tried to spread around that it was Sid Hatfield who shot the mayor, But that was never confirmed. They said he had feelings for his wife, and the rumor was never confirmed.
You got to say, I got the feeling that the mayor was really a good guy in all this. That he
seemed to be.
Yeah, he was trying to be.
He's pretty damn fearless. I'll give him that. Because he was only, you know, when he was made mayor, he was only 27 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a young man.
Mm-hmm.
He was not scared of much, and he. But yeah, it kind of tickled me that these guys got the 40 submachine guns there, and they're, no, we're here to arrest you. And when the shooting starts, it's like a whole circle around them.
Well, and it really didn't last very long. Sid went flat after. Some of these Baldwin Felts detectives.
Yeah, I got the feeling that the mayor was trying to resolve things peacefully, and Sid was like, bring it on.
No, mm-hmm. Sid went flat after him. In fact, he found one of them in the Meituan post office and shot and killed him there, just walked in and you know, assassinated him.
Well, he told him that the guy, he told him, come out and fight. And the guy's like, no, you want to fight, you come in and get me. He just walked in and shot him.
Yeah. It's like Indiana Jones.
Yeah. And this makes Sid sound like a badass, but, I mean, you're talking about guys who had been...
Sid kind of was.
Well, he was. But, I mean, you're talking about these detectives who were terrorizing the coal miners. They were going to these camps that they had set up in the middle of the night and just unloading, you know, shooting women and children. I mean, they were not... nice people.
No. When the shooting finally did stop and all the townspeople came out and came down, and there were casualties on both sides. There were 7 Baldwin Felt detectives that were killed, including Albert and Lee Feltz. 2 miners were killed. And there were 4 other bystanders that had been wounded, aside from the mayor, who ended up dying from his injuries. So actually, Baldwin Felt kind of, they got crushed.
They took their ass kicked.
Yeah, they got their ass kicked. The governor of the state, John Cornwell, ordered the state police to take control of Meituan. They did. Hatfield and his men eventually, they did cooperate. The miners improved their efforts to organize, and there was just, this started, it was a domino effect, really, because this battle emboldened, is that a word?
Emboldened.
Sure. These workers, and so they were, there was widespread violence. They started doing, on July 1st, the miners' union went on another strike. Railroad cars were blown up. Strikers were beaten and left to die by the side of the road. Tom Feltz, the remaining Feltz brothers, or he was the last one, actually, was avenging his brother's death like he's a supervillain. He would send undercover operatives to collect evidence to convict Sid Hatfield and his men.
Yeah, they were out to get Sid at that point.
Yeah, and that's how Sid... and his deputy were assassinated. Was that they were actually going to a hearing? They were going to a hearing about the murder of Albert Phelps, and that's when he was.
And when they had a charge about blowing up a
coal tipple.
Yeah. Yeah, so there were some charges against them. They went to
because court. They got acquitted of one, and then they charged him with another.
But they murdered him, right? In broad daylight on the courthouse steps.
Yeah, they were just waiting for him. They was waiting for him.
None of them were ever convicted.
Right.
None of those guys were ever convicted of that. They all said it was in self-defense. Mm.
And by this point, Sid was a folk hero to the coal miners.
Oh, absolutely.
And once he was murdered and these guys walked...
Once he was murdered and they walked, it was all...
It kind of took the steam out of their... wind out of their sails a little bit.
Took the wind out of their sails for a minute, but then it was... And you got to remember, these are guys that had worked in horrible circumstances, horrible jobs. They've been abused by the company. These people have been just taking shit their whole lives. But killing Hatfield was the final straw.
Yeah, because that, he had become the one thing that would not tolerate. He became a leader.
He was really the only place they had to turn to.
Well, he was a symbol.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was the one place they had to turn. The mayor and Civ, they offered some semblance of protection to the people.
Right.
And that was their, you know, I mean, we talk about today, you know, people go back and forth how, well, it don't matter who you vote for, Congress, Republican, Democrats, whatever, everybody's bought and paid for. But really, these people were truly bought and paid for.
There was no habeas corpus.
There was no recourse to
the law.
There
was no recourse at all, right.
And this wasn't the only place that this went on. I mean, this was going on, we read, in Harlan County and a couple other places in Kentucky.
Sure. There was a similar massacre, similar battles in Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado. There was another massacre.
So, yeah. So they were taking these people who they probably shouldn't have been messing with, that didn't really have a ton to lose and weren't real, real bright.
Right. And when they
pissing them off.
Well, and the big mistake they made was shooting Hatfield. Because when they shot Hatfield, now you got over in the other county,
Logan County,
and that's where you got Sheriff Chapin. And he had really crushed the strikers over there. He called martial law and declared martial law, threw a bunch of them in jail for treason.
But yeah, again, this was that whole anti-communist Red Scare era where they would just throw people in jail without.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Habeas corpus or, you know, the warrants or anything. You're just, you're trying to organize, you're a communist, we'll throw you in the
We'll throw you in for treason.
Maybe they're putinistas. So,
yeah.
Well, now Hatfield's dead. And these miners who have put up, you can do a lot. They have put up with a lot. This is the final straw. It's like, you know what, all right, now we've had enough. Now, these guys all have guns. So they start this place called Cold Creek, and they start to gather around Cold Creek to militarize. And
that's why you don't piss off hillbillies.
They start to take some action. No, you do not. You do not.
And a lot of these guys had served in the First World War.
Right. They were veterans.
Right.
And so they started to patrol and guard the area. Now Chapin, he decides to send some troopers over to the Little Coal area to find out what's... No, Don Chapin.
Oh, okay.
The sheriff. If there's one real evil man in this, it's Chapin. I mean, and they're all evil. The coal operators are evil. The governor's evil. Sure. I mean, they're all evil because they basically said, screw the Constitution, screw the law. You know, the one thing in America was supposed to be built on is that everybody has recourse to the law. These people didn't have it. So... Anyway, Chapin, he sends some guys over there to Coal River, where these guys are starting to congregate. Mm-hmm. And these guys catch them. They strip them of their weapons and send them back on their way. So now,
they decide, you know, okay, here's what we're going to do. This is the UMW, United Mine Workers, the District 17. They're going to call a rally, and they're going to go to Charleston. So they go to Charleston, and you got the leaders of the union at this time are the Frank Keeney and Fred Mooney, the key players up until a point. So they get out there. They get up to Charleston. There's a big, big march up there, and they want to organize. So what they do is they give their demands to the governor. It's Ephraim Morgan, and they give him a petition with the miners' demands. And they're pretty reasonable demands, really. I mean, they're not nothing unreasonable. Morgan just says, hell no. Just rejects them out of hand. So now the miners are pissed. And now they're starting to talk about a march on Mingo to free these miners that have been arrested. You know, now they've done, you know, blood has been spilled.
Right.
What has happened? They have started shooting people. You know, with Hatfield and Massacre. So these guys are ready to use weapons. So anyway, now they have this rally in Charleston on August 7th. Now there's an interesting lady that is involved in all this, and her name's Mary Harris Jones. They call her Mother Jones.
Mother Jones.
And now we could do a whole podcast on her.
Yeah, she's an interesting character in the magazine and online. Online magazine Mother Jones was named after her.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. And now she kind of and she had basically dedicated her whole life to organizing. She started out really as child labor. You know, she wanted to get rid of this child labor. And I won't spend too much time on her, but she kind of knew what she was doing.
Yeah, she's an interesting character.
She'd been through this organizing thing a million times with a million different places. And she told the miners, do not march into Logan. You know, you're going to be, you don't have enough force.
Yeah,
Government's going to be against you. You know, you're going to be overpowered.
She saw a bloodbath coming.
Yeah, that's what she saw. Now what people were saying was, oh, she's lost her nerve, you know. So, but these guys, they just been lied to and lied to, and they're pissed off at Governor Morgan. So now all of a sudden you got Lynn's Creek, which is in another county, and that's where they start congregating. So by August 20, and this is less than 2 weeks from that time, you've got 13,000 armed miners.
I mean, you got a regiment there.
Yeah. 13,000 on miners, and anybody who knows these Appalachian people, they're tough people. I mean, they lived under hard circumstances. They're not people you just want to get into some kind of hillbilly war with. So they are tough people. You're Appalachian, ain't you, Blue-Eyed Devil?
No.
I am actually Appalachian.
That's right. You're the Appalachian one. Yeah.
You can tell because look how close his eyes are together.
Oh, shut
up. Yeah. And I remember you coming in playing the banjo one day, right?
Yeah. Deliverance.
You was telling me
there's a difference between hillbillies and Appalachians.
Yeah. Now, these miners, though, as Appalachians can be, they are tough people, but they can be a little lazy, too.
What are you trying to say?
Well, they decided they didn't want to walk all the way up there, so they just commandeered some trains. They just stopped some trains and said, hey, you know. And one they called the Blue Steel Special, which could be the Blue-Head Devil Special. But anyway, they march up with a bunch of people. They hook up with some people in Danville and Boone County on their way to Mingo. Now, Keeney and Mooney, who I'd mentioned before, the leaders of the mine workers, they decide, now these two tough son of bitches, they run to Ohio. Okay? They're like, we don't want any part of this.
Well, they saw where it was going.
They saw where it was going.
I think they had arrest warrants out for them, or they were going to be charged.
Yeah, well, they took off. Well, they got, now he got, and I love this name, Bill Blizzard. Bill Blizzard.
Bill Blizzard, like snow.
It's like a WWE guy. Bill Blizzard.
Yeah. It's like porn.
In comes Bill Blizzard. And he's gonna take care of the miners. He's in charge of the miners now. Now, meanwhile, this dirty, nasty, some bitch Don Chafin, who really is, if they have podcasts in hell, you're listening to me now. He's really worse than if you remember a while back, Johnny Footstool.
He's worse than Johnny Footstool.
Oh, yeah, he's goodness. A coward. But anyway, I'll get on it.
He was in the back pocket of the coal industry.
The Stone Creek coal place tells Chafin, you know what, how much money you need. So they get the Logan County Cooperators Association, give Chafin all this money. He puts a private army together of nearly 2,000 men. 2,000 men. Now, what he doesn't know at this time is that there's 13,000 hillbillies with rifles coming at him.
Mm-hmm.
But he thinks he can take it. Now, he can't, because what he's got is the miners got to cross this mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the high ground, and he's got better weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So there's on August 25th, there's a little bit of a skirmish. But most of the miners are still about 15 miles away. But now that the skirmish starts, President Harding, who, you know, everybody knows was one of our finest presidents.
Easy.
Well, I think history has shown Harding, no matter what party you're from, is probably one of the worst presidents we ever had.
You use the word skirmish, though. I think that's spectacular.
It was a little skirmish. It was just a couple
fracas.
Bullets,
was it a fracas?
It was a fracas, yeah.
I like fracas.
Now, he threatens to send in federal troops, and Martin MB-1 bombers. So they have this long meeting in Madison and Boone County, and agreements are made to convince the miners to go on home.
Boone County, West Virginia, or Boone County, Kentucky?
Well, of course we're in West Virginia. Devil, what do you think? They teleported themselves?
It's not like they're that far apart.
We're talking
there.
About West Virginia.
You jackhole. Well, the miners thought, they thought this was going to be a good thing, because they thought the federal government would come in.
Yeah,
they thought
the federal government was going to be on their side.
Right, exactly.
So, but then they think they made an agreement. They think everything, and they tell them to return home. So the miners are itching for a battle, because they're pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they have this meeting in Madison, and, you know, Harding's threatening to send troops in and blah, blah, blah. So the miners thinks it's going to be a little bit, you know, kind of a futile effort. So, futile. Like Timmy
that.
Was saying, futile. Futile. Yeah. It's futile and futile. Timmy was saying
well,
they had a futile
how much
system, but anyway.
It depends on how much of a badass you are to say that word.
Exactly. But anyway,
resistance is futile.
Chafin pissed off, because he got an army of 2,000 men, and he got a bunch of miners out there.
And he's got submachine guns.
He's got submachine guns. He's got planes.
They chartered planes. They chartered planes
with bombs on them.
To drop bombs on the miners. Did they get that one lady to fly the plane? Because she would just fall right out. What was her name?
Bessie Coleman.
She would never do that.
Yeah, she was Bessie Coleman.
Bessie Coleman
flew
the miners.
First plane, and she crashed it into a tree. She fell out.
Fell right out.
Bessie would have been fighting for the miners.
So,
good lady.
The miners, being reasonable men, mm-hmm. As far as Appalachians can be, because they're not.
I mean, come on now.
You know what? You come from Portsmouth, right?
Yeah, it's not exactly in the middle of coal country, but we border West Virginia and Kentucky. Yeah.
So you know what the Appalachians are like? They're like You know what they're like? They're like the Irish with funny accents, is what they are.
You know the funny
thing? They're hard-headed people. And a side note, but most of the Irish.
They're like
believe
Irish
it or not.
With funny accents.
Well, to me, the Irish don't have funny accents. I mean,
of course not.
But most of the Appalachians were of Irish and Scottish descent.
Yes, that's true. Now, the funny thing about all that is when you know the government and the big industrial giants, the coal companies, and so forth. Call them out, the coal miners out, as a communist organization.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I grew up in Appalachia. I have yet to meet a communist.
They're not communists over there, no.
No, they're not commies over there. But anyway, they decide to head on home. Well, Chafin don't like this. Chafin, because he's been itching for a battle ever since. So reports start coming back that he's just shooting Union sympathizers in Sharples over in Sharples, West Virginia. Now, that's just north of Blair Mountain. And families are getting caught in the crossfire.
Now the miners are like, oh hell no. Now you have reached, now you have done something so egregious. When these coal miners reached the all hell no part, that they turned back around. They turned back around, and by August 29th, which is the Colonel and the Missus' anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Chaffin's men, they're outnumbered. But, I mean, by August 29th, this battle's on. It's on.
Like Donkey Kong?
It's on like Donkey Kong. Just like Donkey Kong. And I picture Chaffin as little Mario. Little cheesy mustache.
I picture him
with
as
wax on end,
Harry
tying
Chaffin.
Somebody to a railroad track.
So we got 10,000 armed coal miners. We've got 3,000.
How many coal miners' daughters?
Thugs.
Thugs. We got thugs. I'll call them thugs.
We're throwing out thugs.
Thugs, yeah. And then you got planes. But now the planes, they're dropping homemade bombs. So I don't know if this is like moonshine.
Like Molotov cocktails?
Yeah. they're just
like
throwing out there.
Like they
got
fly
M80s.
Low. They just fly low and toss them out.
I don't know if they got they kites. Or, you know,
Before they had drones, thank God.
Well, apparently these planes were more like drones because more of them crashed into trees than actually landed. But,
that makes me happy somehow.
It was Bessie.
Yeah.
It was not Bessie. She would not have been a part of that. Those shenanigans.
But they were dropping bombs on these guys. And General Billy Mitchell, he was a war hero in World War I. He was fighting against the miners.
And this was called the largest rebellion.
It was the largest armed rebellion. Mm-hmm.
The Civil War?
Yeah.
Since the Civil War. It was not the people were calling it the largest civil rebellion, which really would not be true because the March on Washington, things right. like that, and the Civil Rights. But this
well,
was largest
up to
armed.
This, up to this time.
Yeah. But know. This was largest armed. Well, even... Well, not up to this time because the World War One veterans yeah. when they went to Washington, the ten cities.
Yeah.
But they weren't they weren't armed and they weren't shooting people.
Right.
This was an armed rebellion basically against the government.
The bonus.
It was a free for all.
Well, and it wasn't against the government, it was against the company the coal operators, but
and it wasn't just one coal company, it was all
the
of them.
Association. But the problem was once the government got involved and they were fighting troops, it became a very iffy thing. Now, by September 2nd, you got federal troops there. And Blizzard, Bill Blizzard, realizes, oh, shit, the federal government's here. We're going to just get our asses whipped. Let's get the hell out of here. So he tells the miners to start heading home.
Yellow belly.
Oh, no, he just got good sense. Now, the miners are fearing jail, and they're afraid they're going to get their weapons taken away, so they start hiding them in the woods. And to this day,
people are
finding weapons and live ammunition hidden in trees and crevices. And
I want to go down and search for them.
There were, cool. And this is amazing to me. Thousands, now this is just what's been found. Thousands of spent and live cartridges have been found. There were over 1 million rounds fired in that battle.
That's amazing. Over that's a huge battle. I mean, you're talking
For the number of people killed.
Yeah, there wasn't that many.
There was about 160 total, mostly miners, about 100 miners.
The Appalachians don't have good eyesight. They can't
aim
very well.
They didn't have great guns. Good guns.
Well, they were homemade.
I mean, half of them were shooting slingshots.
You had to go down with your company script to buy
a gun. Now, after this is where it gets really amazing to me. It gets just amazing. 985 miners were indicted for murder, conspiracy to commit murder, accessory to murder, and treason against the state of Wyoming. Now, I didn't know you... West Virginia. Thank you, Timmy. I did not know you could commit a treason against the state.
Yeah, they were throwing
because
everything
because I'm pretty
out.
Sure I commit treason against Kentucky and Indiana every day.
All the time.
The time.
And how many of the those in the coal mine industry were arrested?
Let me see. There was...
A total of?
Nary a one.
Yeah, zero.
Nary a one. And this is... this is what people need to learn about the history of this country. you know, you get this view of freedom and liberty, and yeah, it's been freedom and liberty for a good number of folks, but it's been just a complete ass kicking for a good number of people, you know.
Yeah,
and I mean, and you have, and you know, we try to stay away from politics as best we can on this show because we don't like to get into it, but look at kind of what we're getting in today, and you got, and I'm gonna throw one out there because they ain't ever gonna sponsor us, but you got Walmart. Mm-hmm. Walmart, you got what, about a third of
sued.
A third of the people.
We're going to get sued.
The truth will set you free. Now, this is the truth, girl.
It'll set you free.
You got about a third of the people on government benefits, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting the food stamps, the EBT cards, whatever. Where the hell are they going and spending that?
Oh, Walmart. Oh, I know.
Walmart has become, in a sense, kind of the company store. Now, if and you hear how much people complain about Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing this in the mildest possible degree compared to what these coal miners are going through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can just get up and walk out of Walmart and say, what the hell with this place? I ain't, you know.
As I have done.
Ain't nobody going to shoot you.
As I have done.
Yeah. Ain't nobody gonna shoot you if you do that, you know. So we talk about, you know, oh, Walmart's the devil, they this, they that, just because they're not paying folks great and they're not doing whatever. But it does not even come close to comparing to what these coal miners and, you know, these guys.
Well, yeah, and it wasn't just coal miners. It was auto workers. It was people working in the, you know, steel industry. All these battles had to be fought. And it wasn't like these industrial giants are just going to roll over and give you what, you know, give the workers what they wanted. They were fighting. Literally, blood had to be spilled for wages to be increased, for safer working conditions, for companies to be held accountable. And I think what you're getting at is that over time, that has just
eroded away.
Yeah, it's eroded, and now all those battles for change to happen, for, you know, everyone talks about income disparity.
Yeah.
For that to change, these
battles are going to have to be fought again.
Exactly.
I mean, you have, back in 1984, they had coal mine strikes again. You know, they struck again. You have, and basically what you have is the country from that point on, you know, after, and especially after World War II, when you had the unions really taken off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had 1975, where the auto industry started to get hurt a little bit. Unions started dropping off, and then you had in 80 Reagan firing air traffic controllers, which was really the end of unions. And now the irony of this whole thing is the biggest number of union workers are the government.
Mm-hmm.
Or the government.
You had when the unions were at their height, you had a strong middle class, and
right.
When they start before the unions were organizing workers, you had this disparity between the rich and the middle class and the poor. And then when unions started to take off and organizing, you had a strong middle class,
right,
that lasted between the 40s to the 70s. And then when the unions started to decline, here we again, we're talking about the difference between, you know, the shrinking middle class.
Well, and it's And you jump back down. And we should do a podcast on him one day. We were talking about him yesterday. Huey Long,
mm-hmm,
who said that, you know, hey, Mr. Rockefeller, when you have all the food you can eat, when you have all the clothes you can wear, when you have all the clothes your children can wear, when you have all the clothes their children can wear, and you've taken everything off the table, and you've got everything you possibly need, put a little bit back on the table.
Give us some of your crumbs.
Give us some of your crumbs. That's all we're asking for.
But the union has outlived its usefulness. The union anymore only protects people who don't want to do their job.
Well, I think that's true in some of the cases. I don't think that's true in all the cases. I think if left to the generosity of big business.
We've seen what's happened if left to the generosity of big business.
There's a history there.
And I think that what this shows is that there was a great man. There's a great man still living. And I will not forget a quote from him.
Of course.
And it was, the unions have been the only voice the working man in this country has ever had. And who would you think that great man will be?
I've got an idea, but I'll leave. Oh,
Fred Flintstone.
Blue-haired devil, come on, give me a guess. The unions have been the only voice this country has ever had, the working man has ever had.
Ronald Reagan.
No.
Rockefeller.
No.
Don't know.
Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, for the love of
Jesus Christ.
Quoting Bruce Springsteen. Make it any less accurate. It does not make it any less accurate. It's the only voice they've ever had.
We have labor laws now where these people are not going to be beat. They're not paid in company script. They're not. The union is around now to collect dues. That's the only reason the unions are around now.
My
do you
daddy
know how much
teamster?
Money? I know. I'm not saying they didn't have their time. I'm saying now, do you understand how much it's not the auto work, United Food, UFCW, UC, whatever. If they can get in to Walmart, do you know how much money they'll make on those people? The union.
Well,
and
no
do you
idea.
Know what they'll do for their people? Nothing.
But
nothing.
On the other side of the coin, though, and you have this, and this is not a liberal magazine. It was Forbes magazine that said if Walmart made $25 billion last year.
Sure.
$25 billion. If Walmart took every employee they had that made $15 or less an hour,
mm-hmm.
move them up to $15 an hour.
They'd still make money.
Do you know how much money they make? $15 billion. Now, why does a family need $25 billion?
They're greedy.
Yeah. And now,
I mean, the thing is, too, we're like you said, we're subsidizing that with food stamps and with health care. We're subsidizing Walmart.
Right. And you know what the first thing the colonel going to do? No more free ride from Walmart. Well, the second thing, I told you, well, we'll get into that later, but no more free rides for you.
Okay, so we got a little political on this one. We don't usually like to do that because we don't, we want to kind of keep this apolitical, so, because you get that, you can get that, the political arguments back and forth almost on other podcasts. So we try to stay away from that, but sometimes we're going to get into it. So we thank you for your patience. Okay, so any closing thoughts? After the Battle of Blair Mountain, the union membership started to decline. It was seen as an immediate victory for the big coal companies, although it did publicize the plight of the coal miners that many feel that eventually led to improved conditions, although it took a little time. Brandy, any final thoughts on Meituan or the Battle of Blair Mountain?
No, it's just surprising to me how widespread all of this. It wasn't happening in just one place. It was happening everywhere, at the same time.
Yeah, and this was going on not only in coal mines, but in factories and all parts of this country. And there was a lot of bloodshed on both sides. And, I think that's a part of the history that people either we don't learn about it or we just try to ignore it. But it's led to, we got the weekend off. Right, Charles?
Well, and I believe that what kind of surprised me is how people will go so far before they reach that, what I said, oh, hell no moment. You know, these people, their lives kind of sucked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 12 hours in a mine, you're bent over all day, your knees hurt all day. I mean, it's miserable
and
work.
You're breathing, you're down in the shaft, and you're breathing.
Average life expectancy was what, about 45 years old or something?
My granddad worked in those coal mines.
Yeah, so you weren't going to live long. You weren't living good, and, So,
yeah. And you were working long days. I mean, it wasn't, you know, 8 hours. And I mean, you were down those mines 12, 14 hours a day.
And then you had to recover and get up the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what amazed me.
6 days a week. So it was not a really good working conditions. And, you know, and then you hear, I mean, I know you get politicians and give lip service to this, you know, changing things. You got, and on both sides, people talking now about the inequality of wealth. You got Elizabeth Warren on the Democratic side on the left, and then you have Rand Paul on the right. And, you know, who knows whether or not they're sincere or not, but at least people are talking about it. And you know, but it's going to take more than an Occupy movement, I think, to change things. People don't give up power. People don't give up money very easy. It requires a lot of times blood for that to happen.
Well, as Jefferson said, the tree of liberty needs to be refreshed once in a while by the blood of tyrants.
So,
Thomas Jefferson said that.
Not Bruce Springsteen.
Not Bruce Springsteen.
Well, that's shocking.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen did say, though.
No.
So he said something about a pink Cadillac.
He really did. He likes pink Cadillacs.
Bruce Springsteen
with plush velvet seats
could have foreseen this coming because he said, "There's a darkness on the edge of town.
There's something happening here. What it is isn't exactly clear." That was Buffalo Springfield.
That is Buffalo Springfield.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Colonel, any final thoughts?
Say no.
I will be campaigning. I'm going to do my media blitz here shortly.
We look forward to that.
Where I clarify some of my positions. And
good luck.
And no, there's a couple positions the colonel prefers. But the colonel not an indiscreet man. So that's really, no, this was, to me, this was interesting. It was,
Yeah, well, it's not something typically we do. And like I said, you know, we're not going to make this, we're not going to do a podcast where we preach at you all the time. But sometimes we'll just get some run onto something where we'll have our own opinions.
And it's kind of things like this why the colonel's running.
Yeah.
Because this is, I mean, by any standards, you look at this and you say, wow, these people was getting screwed. I mean, I don't care who you are.
Right.
You could be a Republican. You could be a Tea Party. You could be a Democrat. You could be a Communist. You could be a Socialist. Well, these people is getting screwed.
And you know, point taken. And you look at West Virginia and Kentucky now. I mean, they're solid red states. So it's not like you know, there's a bunch of left wingers down there.
Yeah.
This is they're solid conservatives down there. Okay, so that's it.
So when the colonel get elected, he's gonna fix all this.
And what's your motto going to be?
Shut the hell up.
No matter what the issue is.
Shut the hell up.
Abortion.
Abortion? I ain't going to have one. Okay. Shut the hell up.
Okay, so I'm not going to ask you to get into specifics, but Obamacare, what do you say?
Obamacare?
No, you don't have to go into
Obama ain't going to be in office. Shut the hell up. The colonel going to be in office.
If I ask you, what's your stance on the Keystone Pipeline?
It ain't coming through my backyard. Shut the hell up.
Okay, and with that, we're going to say goodbye. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you all again real soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.